the committee to later, because you know, we have this proviso in Parliament about giving members adequate time before the cancellation or the adjournment of a meeting. So we have rejigged the agenda to deal with minutes first, and well, after the adoption, and we have persuaded the co-ops who were scheduled for this afternoon to come forward. So you know that, in other words, instead of finishing at 4 o'clock, we expect to finish at 12:30, 1 o'clock. So at least that's some consolation to members themselves. And if we can, Ms. Naidoo, get a written apology from the Deputy Minister in due course of today, that I have that written apology. And the second thing, just to do with the agenda itself, members will be going to Kenya in due course, for about five of you, and often some members feel, after having been outside the country, that they need a 3 days recovery, or at least a full day. Now, it's not really possible for us to indulge your health in that manner. So if we could persuade you to take all your necessary vitamins and to find yourself here on Friday, because you will be back Thursday, and I know some of you have got your dancing shoes on, as it were, running around. Now, if you can be back here Friday, we may be able to delay the meeting from 9 until 10, you know, just to allow for members to get here slower. And it's an important date, that, the 3rd of August, because it is the quarterly reports on the DTI budget among, and SIPCO as well, or SIPC, as some people are calling it. And I think that those are two important areas. You did have listed there the NCC. I've decided to take the NCC off that morning, primarily because they are unable to come this Friday. And I think the matter of late notice is not going to be acceptable to the committee any longer. When people have had 3 weeks' notice of a meeting, then I think, you know, within that week, if you have prior engagements, you know immediately, you receive it, I have a prior engagement. Otherwise, if it's not a prior engagement, it's a post-engagement. Yes. And I'm not prepared to entertain that in future as the chairperson. So I want that made clear to the department. Very, very clear. The second aspect here is that we have agreed to schedule the meeting of the NCC, given that they have got a meeting which they have indicated was a prior engagement, which they informed me of yesterday. So we have postponed their Friday meeting to the 8th of August. And on the 8th of August, we will deal with the quarterly, you know, budget, as it were, as well, so that we have deal with both matters on the same day. I did ask the committee secretary to please distribute the research document. I'm not sure if that has been done yet. It's a matter of focus stacking it, so I hope it will be done this morning if it hasn't already been done, so that you have that, and should you wish to put any questions to the NCC, if you would let me have them by today, this afternoon or tomorrow morning at the latest, and they will be added to the letter which confirms that appointment has been switched from this Friday to Friday the 8th of August. Wednesday the 8th of August. I hope that's going to be in order with everyone, Wednesday the 8th. So those are just the little announcements that we have come, we have to bring to your attention. But we do have with us today the DDG, of DTI, Ms. Zodwa M. Tooley, is here with us already. And thank you very much for being with us this morning, DDG. We also have Ms. Busi Ngwenya, and is that Director of Strategy? Of course, it's the DDG CCRD, as well as yourself then, Ms. Ngwenya, Special Projects, the Parliamentary Liaison Officer, Ms. Naidu, and the Parliamentary Legal Advisor, Ms. Advocate Van der Merwe. And, of course, the most important aspect of the committee, the members themselves. So we, yeah, that's the important aspect, and we can get down to business. All right. We have apologies, though, from one or two members. It's Mr. Advocate Alberts is still away. Honourable Wong, who's attending, he is the primary member of the DA in Minerals, I understand. So he's the, of COPE, is it COPE, yes. So it mustn't inflate your membership figures just yet. Of COPE is also away. But I don't have any other apologies. The whip tried to get hold of me late last night, and I haven't had a response this morning, so I can't comment on that. But perhaps he's delayed for some personal reason. Let's just get out the minutes, please, that we should have done yesterday. We've got the 16th of May to start with. And let's take page one. Please look at your, whether you've been accurately reflected as present or an apology here, and whether your name has been spelled correctly. Page two. Page two. This was the formal consideration on the committee's draft report on the budget. As a matter of fact, we did go through some of these minutes, but there was some reason, I'm just remembering now that I see them again, where the members had a very different opinion. And it was the attachment of the actual report. You will recall that members were not happy that that was not attached, so we wouldn't pass the minutes. So that's very straightforward. They are now attached. But I will just go through each page, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5. Right. And if you just look at the attached register there, see what disturbs me. Is Mr. McIntosh actually a member here? Was he a member at the time, Honourable McIntosh? Mr. McKenzie? Now I said, Mr. McKenzie, was he a member then? Yes.
He was at that time.
Yeah. Well, Huang, is that right?
Huang is the
That's right. So we must get that changed, because when was Mr. Huang sent to the committee? Yes, but I'm just looking at the 16th of May. Right. The process. Right, right. Okay. Can we have someone to propose adoption of these minutes, 16th of May? Yes, thank you, Honourable Vanda Merwe. Seconded. 16th of May. Yeah, thank you, Honourable James. Right, that's out the way. Now can we have the next slot? Is right towards the end, isn't it? Is that the 30th of May? Let me just make sure about that, but I think it is. Right, the 30th of May, which was a Wednesday. We didn't look at these at all. So if you would look at them a little bit more carefully, they were, if you remember, they were here, but there were too many alterations. So, or amendments, so we referred them straight back. Briefing of FABs, etc., the strategic plans, the members present, the apologies we had with three of you, there we are. We did have a full house at that stage. And we then have page two. Page three. What I'm a little concerned with, and I did raise this then, you see on page three, when under point 3.3, we say here, the committee focused on the following. The FAB's role with respect to veterinary service, and if an overlap exists with respect to phytosanitary services. Now, we don't really get anything after that. So we focused on that, we raised a concern, and in a way it's still floating out there somewhere. Now, that's not satisfactory. You know, we need to know, was it explained? Did we get a response? And, you know, I don't know if the DDG in Thule may cast some light on the subject, but you will recall this was a very technical meeting at the time of that, and if I'm not mistaken, yes, Mark's building. And a lot of the information we were given was highly technical, and that issue came up. So I know we got an explanation, but there's no explanation given here, you see. So I'm going to have to refer that back because that was an important meeting we had. The reason being, it related to the carbon footprint as well as the WTO. And we just don't have that. It's as if we didn't really have the presentation. Do you follow? So could we just check on that, Mr. Hermans, maybe through Hansard or something of that nature? I'm not saying it's wrong. We then had the labelling and regulations with respect to that and the GMOs, and then a resolution focus on those and the microenvironment. That particular labeling, if we look at the time that it came out, it was dealing with what was the Israel's labeling of what was produced in Palestine territory. That whole issue did come up there on the same day, and I will raise that under matters arising quickly once we've passed the minutes. But we're not going to be passing these minutes, and that's part of the problem, because we've got to come back and add. So let me just raise it here then, that, just a little typo there, that we do need to know whether or not the date has been extended for comment or submission, you know, on this. Because I think at the moment the date has closed. Am I correct? The date has been closed. And we did ask the department to come back once that gate was closed so that we could look at the submissions. And we haven't really had any communication on that front, you see. So I'm looking at the parliamentary liaison officer, but also yourself, DDG. If we can just get a status on that to see when it's possible to report on the matter directly. I know you haven't come here today to do that.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honourable members. Like you correctly point, Chair, that the date for the submission has closed. At this point, we are in the process of compiling and summarizing submissions and analyzing the issues that have been raised. And as soon as we have finalized that part and have some recommendations ready, then we will be able to advise Parliament of a date. But at this point, we have not determined the date. But we have received a number of submissions, and I think the number of submissions that are similar in nature, because the number of people that have been making submissions that are petition-like, and but we will analyze all of those and take into account all of the issues. A number of other people have requested to submit even after the closing date, and we've welcomed that. So if there are other pressing comments that people would still like to submit, while we're in the process of analyzing, we still welcome those.
I think that clears that up. I'm sure we can correct that part of the minutes before Friday, am I right, so that we can just pass the earlier part right. Who is Al Speaker from the ANC? Oh, to pass the minutes. Right, okay. Okay. But we haven't. The last set of minutes also to, you know, almost the last, the 5th of June. We had a few members present for our committee. We had many, many people were not here. And I can't remember why there were so many people away. Am I correct, Honourable James, that that may have been some political party meeting with which one of you may have requested you know, leeway to it, you know, just the apology. Was there not something there on the 5th of June? Because I see both yourself and Mr. Hill Lewis were away that day. I'm sure there was something. Yes, okay, that's fine. And then we have Salah. I think you were in hospital, were you not? And comments for Debbie wasn't well. And the Honourable Elbert. So we had Mr. Hong was here for the first time on the 5th. Of June, but that unfortunately did not give us a quorum. And I think the that was an important meeting, and maybe unless one is ill or has this critical party meeting, that one does need to try and attend. But I know that was raised with me. At that particular meeting, we moved to the briefing of Department of Trade and Industry on the integrated strategy on the development and promotion of co-ops there on page 2. That was a briefing meeting, and the committee focused on the following. Where we have focused on the following with respect to ongoing legislation, it would be important for us to try and indicate what may have come out of there, because we are going to be passing legislation on the matter in due course. But there's no reason, because that was simply the briefing, if we can have someone to propose the adoption of the 5th of June. But the reason why we finally got a quorum, if I'm not mistaken, did we not have someone attending then, or we didn't take a decision? No decision. Right, can we now have one of Fubs, Kwabasa, Mabasa, Vandermeerwa, and Huang? Yes, thank you. Thank you, Honourable Vandermeerwa, and seconded by Honourable Mabasa. Right. The apology there. Right. Okay. The last set. And that is the 13th of June. We have full half in attendance, opening welcome, page 2, briefing by the Department of Trade and Industry. There's a very full briefing here. On and on. And I think, was it agreed that then we would start with the Hansards, or is it only from this week? From this week. Right. You will remember that we called for the documents on the first meeting, which was the previous week, or previous day. If we could please have documents that were properly numbered and references. Do you remember that? So I hope you're all holding the correct documentation as I talk. And then the meeting adjourned. We had, the Metrology Institute was here, was that right? NAMESA. Yeah. And I think most of us felt that we had not ignored, but we didn't give them sufficient focus for the last 2 years. And I do want the DDG's comment on that, just once again to re-emphasize the importance, you know, the important role that metrology plays. It's not just here as some technical institute, but perhaps you could just indicate its impact in relation to policy within the past 2 years. Are you able to do that, DDG?
Chair, unfortunately that's the area for Nimrod Zog. He is the one responsible for that area. So I would not be able to give the status or any update on that issue at the moment.
Okay, then Ms. Naidu, if we can just get that, because we did ask for that to come back, and to my knowledge, we've not received that correspondence. Yeah. Okay. But thank you then. Can we have someone to propose the adoption of the 13th? Thank you, Honourable Kwabasa, seconded by Honourable Mabasa. Well, that's all the minutes bar one set for a clarification on Friday. That takes us to the end of that term. I hope, DDG, that you will find yourself having come down constructively, even though we won't be dealing with anti-piracy at this point of time, and for the reasons I've already stated. But we hope with the co-ops being here as well, although that is not your area. I know, it's Depots of Cordill, is it not? Yeah, but perhaps still from the senior section that you would find it useful to have been here as well. Thank you very much for the rest of the DTI team, and apologies to the DDG and Julie.
Thank you very much. I think unfortunately we'll have to take off because we tried to make time for this presentation today, but we have other engagements that we can attend to. Thank you very much.
I'm sorry about this because I know that's a lot of your time, but if you would leave the presentation with us to study before we communicate with the Minister, Deputy Minister herself. Right. Members, we now turn to the co-ops, and once again we have the Chief Director with us here today, although I understand the DDG, CIPO's Accordor, is not here. Okay. And you will continue then to brief us on the matter. And we've got Transforum with us, Business Development. We can just get an indication as to who is here from Transforum. Is that Mr. Paul Browning, Public Transport Analyst? But you are representing the Transforum Business Development. Right, if you would proceed. Thank you.
I would prefer to stand if I can do that. Would that be... is that in order? I mean, everybody is sitting down here. Would you mind if I stand? Thank you. Thank you. I always say it doesn't make too much difference whether I'm standing or sitting down, but it helps me to make eye contact. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes. Indeed. Thank you. Yes. Perhaps I can begin immediately before, even before I introduce myself, to say that there seems to be, have been some slight confusion over a PowerPoint presentation which I hoped had been loaded onto this laptop. It hasn't, and I don't have it with me. But I will. I have prepared a written submission, which I see on the table in front of me here, Madam Chair, and I will speak to that. The message I wish to put over is relatively simple, and I hope I will be able to do so without the assistance of Mr. PowerPoint. Chair, my name is Paul Browning. I am representing the Transforum Business Development. It's a small company that deals with change management and performance management, but my particular role is that of public transport analyst. And if you will allow me... Madam Chair, I hope I didn't give that the impression. I wish to speak about the minibus taxi cooperative and the influence of the cooperative's Second Amendment bill, or the potential influence. And therefore, if you'll allow me, I will just say why I feel I have some locus standi to speak about the minibus taxi. If you look at me, you will feel, you will perhaps think that I don't own minibus taxis, and I'm pleased to say I don't, and I never have done. But I am a public transport operator by experience, and for almost 20 years now, I've been involved with the minibus taxi. I was, from 1987, the transport policy advisor to the South African Black Taxi Association, before that finally faded. And in the first five-year term of office of the South African National Taxi Council, SANTACO, I was again its public transport policy advisor. That's all I hope I need to say at this stage. I do have an experience in this field, and I hope that in questions which may come later, I can demonstrate that. Madam Chair and members of the committee, the question of taxi cooperatives has been in the forefront of discussion about development of the minibus taxi since the formation of the South African Black Taxi Association in the very late 1970s. It could be said, in fact, that that was one of the principal reasons for SABTA's founding. It seems obvious, doesn't it, that there are individual operators. They have to buy huge amounts of spares, vehicles, fuel, and what have you. They buy them through middlemen, and if only they could get together and form a cooperative, then they would get the benefits of bulk buying. That is so obvious that it almost seems like what I believe today is called a no-brainer. But it has never worked. Never say never, and a wise old man, even older than me, once told me, and therefore there must be, someone may be able to point to an exception, but it's probably the exception that proves the rule. For one reason or another, the taxi operators, taxi associations, have simply not been able to get their act together sufficiently, over a sufficiently long period of time, or with sufficient intent, to make taxi bulk buying cooperatives work. I learned that quite early in my experience with the taxi industry, but with my background as an operator, I felt that there was another kind of cooperation that was needed, and that if the individual operators could band together in an operating entity, then they would be able to do many beneficial things, including employing professional management, but would also be able to develop and enter into contracts with the private sector, but also with the public sector, in the same way that, going back in those days, the Putcos and Golden Arrows had, as they have now, subsidized contracts with government. In 2007, situation changed with the publication the approval by Cabinet of the Department of Transport's Public Transport Strategy and Action Plan. And that envisaged in our 12 major cities integrated public transport networks, which would be, in the first instance, the first 12 years it was eventually decided, would be operated by the existing operators, both bus and taxi. This seemed like the obvious. This seemed like the obvious way in which the urban taxi, at least, would move from its present hand-to-mouth existence into a guaranteed, orderly format. It would mean that the taxi operators would need to gradually give up their existing businesses, but in exchange they would receive shareholdings for in the companies which would be operating them. We see my city in Cape Town. At the moment there is only the starter service, and Councillor Heron is manfully trying to get Golden Arrow and the taxi operators and one or two others together to try and form a single operating company. And perhaps, Madam Chair, that is the core of what I wish to say. The Cabinet approved this strategy in March 2007, that is 5 years ago. So far we have just one example, one single example of a full-scale line, a BRT, Bus Rapid Transit, or here in the Mother City, Integrated Rapid Transit, IRT. We have just one full-scale example operating, and that is Rea Vaya in Joburg, on a line from Soweto into the CBD. It has feeder services, but that's all we've managed to achieve. Now, the city fathers here will point to my city, and I've just had the pleasure of using my city in from the airport this morning, and indeed to make my way here. But it is still acknowledged to be a starter service. It's operated on interim contracts. And one might ask, why then, given the possibility and the opportunity for taxi operators to enter into a 12-year guaranteed contract with government, why have they not been tumbling over themselves to get to be the first to sign on the dotted line? And my experience with the taxi industry over these 20 years or more, I see, by the way, one of the documents which the Secretary has kindly made available is a paper I've written called A Coming of Age, 21 Years with the Minibus Taxi. I seem to be a lot younger than 21 years ago that I started it, but perhaps I've just got grey hairs over the time. I came to realise that making this huge step from the rugged individualism of the moment to combining with others in an entity in which the individual does not have direct, feels he has, does not have direct control, is just not practical. A paper which I wrote in May 1991 makes this point, and I hope you may be able to speed read through some of it. And I believe that is still the case today. And I came to the conclusion in that May 1991 paper that the right interim halfway house, call it what you will, was the cooperative. This was long before, God bless them, the DTI's cooperative development policy of 2004. This was back in May 1991. But there was a cooperative act. Cooperatives had been successful in many, many areas. And it seemed to me, as it seems to me today, that in order to overcome the fear of change and the resistance to giving up something that the individual knows well and intimately, and handing it over to a body that then sort of takes all the decisions on his behalf, it was just too big a jump to make in one go. And therefore I have been advocating that rather than companies, these integrated rapid public transport networks should be based, as far as the taxi industry is concerned, on the development of cooperatives, which can then, after this, after a period of transition and comfort zone, can become companies.
What I would really appreciate from your side, the transport and business development, Mr. Browning is if we could just focus more on the legislation in front of us. We will at our leisure be able to read some of the background, but you're coming in here on taxis, a bulk buying taxi cooperative, as it were. Now, if you can focus on the current legislation before us and indicate to us perhaps what are some of the challenges the transport could face here. And I think that would be more constructive for us here, unless members believe that perhaps they do want to go on in this trend. But I think we need more focus on the matter in question. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I thank you for your guidance, and perhaps we're on the same wavelength, because I was just about, having set the scene, at some length, about to come to the matter of the legislation before you. The legislation before you, particularly the Cooperative's Second Amendment Bill, provides, in my layman's terms, for relationships between government in intergovernmental relationships in promoting the idea of taxi cooperatives. There is particularly an interprovincial coordinating committee, as I recall, in which the minister can, the Minister of Trade and Industry can designate members from national departments, even though it is called an interprovincial committee. And this, Madam Chair, seems to me particularly relevant, because the problem that I have had in trying to inculcate, if that's the right word, within the Department of Transport, and when I say that, I do not wish to either sound grandiose, and I certainly do not wish to imply criticism of any member of the Department of Transport. They have their own views and their own job to do. But nonetheless, I do not think that they are aware of the importance of and the significance of the DTI's cooperative strategy as exemplified in the document, in the large document that the DTI produced just a couple of months ago. And I think, therefore, they are probably not aware of the, certainly not aware of the impending legislation. It's silly of me to say they're not aware. Somewhere in the environment there will be somebody who's aware. But I'm going to ask the committee, through you, Chair, if it might consider whether taking these integrated rapid public transport networks as an example, and the matters which I have indicated in my written submissions, whether the proposed legislation is sufficient to ensure that other government departments do in fact take proper cognizance of the DTI's cooperative's development strategy in their own functional areas. Perhaps the last thing I will say, and then I promise you I will sit down and ask through you if there are questions. An example of the cooperative approach has been tried in Nelson Mandela Bay. There, five taxi cooperatives have been formed in order to each one to contract with the municipality on one of the groups of routes in Nelson Mandela Bay. The Department of Transport, for its own, no doubt, very good reasons, is unwilling to enter into contracts or to allow the municipality to enter into government-funded contracts with a cooperative. It wishes them to form companies. Now, we are currently in discussion about that, but I believe it is, they have good reasons, and if necessary, if it's appropriate, I will try and tell the committee what those are, but it is perhaps a case study or an exemplar which the committee might like to take into account. Thank you, Chair, and members of the committee for allowing me to make this preliminary statement.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Browning. You may find it quite constructive to take your presentation more to the Transport, Portfolio Committee. Because our focus is, as I say, on the current legislation before us, and you do seem to agree that, yes, we need co-ops in that industry. But if you do come, you know, able to identify some of the challenges you see in the current bill before us, then we would really appreciate that communication from yourself. So if I could just ask you to turn off your mic for a moment, and then I could turn to the committee itself. Yes, Honourable Salah, Honourable van der Merwe, and that's it for the moment.
Chairperson, I think you are right, Chair, to say the presenter prepares a presentation that is more relevant to the Department of Transport. There are basically two areas of transport that we need to look at. From the transport angle, transport department angle, is transport to take people from A to B. That is the core. And from our side, to look at transport as a business. And when we look at transport as a business, we would have appreciated to say, while the Department of Transport is strengthening its legislation to be able to cope with the transportation of people from point A to B, we have legislation as trade and industry with which we intend to look at cooperatives in general in South Africa and not only transport cooperatives. Now, if you come into that kind, your focus should have been transport cooperatives as a business and how it relates to the current bills that we are doing in order to attempt to change the transport, the Cooperatives Act for the better. And what are these areas that you think needs to be changed and to what? How do they have to look like if you can fit in properly and they can be of beneficial to make your taxi cooperatives successful? And I think we have missed that point in the focus of presentation.
Thank you, Honourable Salah, Honourable van der Merwe.
My question was similar. Thank you very much to the presenter. But I mean, my simple question was: does the presenter believe that the bill precludes the establishment of taxi cooperatives? And if so, why? I think maybe I'm a little confused about what the objective is. Thank you.
Honourable James.
Thank you very much, Chair. If Mr. Brani can just explain the following, that cooperatives have not formed in the taxi industry for whatever economic reasons, and therefore the market dynamics there have not resulted in those cooperatives being formed. Yeah. And so that's the lay of the economic land. And so if you think that cooperatives ought to be formed, and you think that there should be some state support, that you need some state support for some kind of market failure, then clearly there has to be incentives. And so the question is, in your view then, are the present incentives that are built into the proposed legislation, there's some start money for startup funds, there's a provision for business support, whether that's inadequate. I mean, it's a question about why, if cooperatives are not formed, why should we form them?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I didn't hear all of Mr. Browning's presentation, but I have read it because we were supplied with it. I would like to join with my colleague, Honourable van der Merwe, as to ask Mr. Browning quite simply, does he think, because this is what we're dealing with, has he had an opportunity to look at this Cooperatives Amendment Bill, and is it not, in terms of the bill, is that the stumbling block, or are there serious stumbling blocks in the bill to forming a thing such as the taxi, a taxi cooperative, whether it's for buying or whether it's for providing feeder services to the bus rapid transport system or whatever it is. That's the one. And then he does say that government has taken a very strong view, well, not necessarily anti-cooperative, but basically saying they should establish companies, these taxi owners, so the company has the shareholders. And that is the second question, you know, how does he feel about that? And then the other one is he's tantamount to saying that the taxi industry, if one wants to put it in practical terms, are such a bunch of independent entrepreneurial cowboys that they don't have the right culture for cooperative forming cooperatives. And does he feel that is there some way, from his obviously intimate knowledge of this industry, whereby one could educate taxi owners into the advantages of a cooperative system and also even of a company system? Those are my three questions.
Fine. Thank you very much. Over to yourself then, Mr. Browning.
Thank you for those very perceptive points. I realised, as the Chair mentioned in her first intervention, that I was in fact laying too much emphasis on the transport scene, and I should perhaps have set out the point that, more clearly, the point I was trying to make about the legislation or the proposed legislation. It is, I think, not so much a case of, as Ms. Stanomeva said, that the bill prevents this. It's a question, perhaps, in my mind, of whether the institutional arrangements which the Second Amendment Bill provides for is likely to give sufficient strength to, well, quite frankly, to the DTI in its dealings with other departments of state. They have their very own functions and very own directives and very own ministers and so on. But this, the cooperative strategy of the DTI runs rather like BBBEE. It runs through, or should perhaps run through all these actions. So it is not a question of the bill would prevent anything. I'm not a parliamentary lawyer, but and it is likely that the bill as it stands, in principle, gives the powers to the Minister of Trade and Industry to be able to influence other departments. I ask the committee, however, to consider whether, in fact, that may be so. Is it not possibly going to be one of those situations, and one understands why they happen, where there is legislation which everybody signs up to and so on, but in practice there's no real influence. I have to say again, whether that is a matter of legislation or policy or intergovernmental relations is something that I can't speak too clearly on. I am concerned that as matters stand at the moment, it is unfortunate that in the area that I work in, and there may be other areas that I'm not familiar with, what seems to be a very important need for the development of cooperatives to the benefit of everyone is certainly not being encouraged by this particular Department of State, and in some instances that I know of is actually being resisted. And therefore I wanted to draw the attention of the committee to this as a case study, if you like, as an example, and ask the committee to consider whether the institutional arrangements in the bill are adequate. May I go to Mr. McIntosh's point? I'm sorry, I've made notes, but I wasn't quite sure whether it was Honourable James or Honourable McIntosh, so I will just respond to them naturally through you, Chair. Should there be incentives? Why haven't cooperatives been formed in the taxi industry despite such self-evident need for combination of this kind? It was the Honourable McIntosh who used words that I would certainly not use in this committee, but where the, I empathize with what he says. I would say this. In my field of transport, Putco and Golden Arrow and Interstate and others don't require to form a cooperative. They are themselves big enough to be able to do the bulk buying themselves. And therefore, I think that the intention of the aim of cooperatives in the taxi industry should be that of moving towards that of the operating cooperative, which can enter into large-scale contracts with government in the way that is envisaged in the 2007 plan. So I would rather... There are still many opportunities for bulk buying cooperatives, but no one has found the secret of gluing them together. A guaranteed contract from government might well glue the more members of the taxi industry together than has been the case up to now. I think, to the best of my knowledge, that covers the points that I have noted, but I'd be grateful if members could remind me of matters that I may have omitted.
Yes, just a minute there. We do have two members. One is a follow-up, which I'll allow first from yourself. Am I right, Honourable McIntosh? And a new question from Honourable Mabasa. Right.
Madam Chair, it's I think purely as a Department of Trade and Industries. I mean, we have in the combi taxi industry one of the most it's huge. It's absolutely huge. It's been a magnificent mechanism for empowering black people, for them to get money to get themselves established. But what the message I'm getting too, and this is now not strictly on co-ops, is that, and I think the presenter is perhaps too polite, and I've never met him in my life before, is saying, when you're dealing with all these combi taxis, owners, you feel like tearing your hair out, because these entrepreneurs, who are these fierce defenders of property rights, cannot even be tamed. Even a good old communist like Jeremy Cronin couldn't get them under control. And these combi taxi chaps do their own thing. But I think it's a national asset, the combi taxi industry. And if we could somehow, and I think the policy is going to be to motivate the guys, and that's what Mr. Browning, I think, was suggesting. The government came and offered them a carrot, not a stick. They may, and I don't see any guarantees with these guys, certainly if you see the way they drive, that they will be there. And the other question is, isn't it time for a bit of reverse BEE? Maybe we should insist the combi taxi industry has 20% whites in it to add a bit of leaven, as it were, in the situation. But that, I know, is very controversial. But maybe it would enrich the taxi industry.
Yes, you know, it just as our presenter lost me, you know, sort of went slightly off the track there. I'm finding you may have been seduced into doing the same thing. So I'm just a bit worried there, Honourable McIntosh. You know, we were veering off into all sorts of sidetracks. Honourable Mabasa.
Thanks, Comrade Chair. I'm not very sure whether Honourable Member McIntosh, when he speaks of BEE and the 20% bet-wise, I'm not sure whether it's on a light note. It's, if it is on a light note, we accept it. But if we have to engage, then Mr. McIntosh will indicate so. But what I want to ask Mr. Browning is, seeing that you have been associated with the taxi industry for so long, and noting that the Cooperatives Act has been in existence for so long, we have had the Act, the 2005 Act, and we're now working on improving it so that it suits the moment. Has the taxi industry discussed and understood the that, you know, it can make appropriate comments to its benefit as a taxi industry. So that we, as we move with you, we must know if you are representing them in the sense of having engaged them thoroughly to appreciate the bill.
The Honourable Mabasa, Honourable Mabasa.
Chair, it seems to me that the cooperatives bill would offer to the taxi industry a great opportunity for them to get reorganized. And I think that the approach would then begin to say, does this bill as it stands now, in your view and the view of the operators themselves, offer that opportunity, and what hindrances exist for them to move forward with speed to do that? Especially because the individualistic nature of the owners, the operators, has you know, landed them in other kinds of activity. This, in my view, offers a very new and a unique opportunity. So we would like to hear what probably could we do to facilitate that process of reorganization and better organization. That's one. But my second challenge, Jefferson, is the comment that the presenter makes that if government were to offer contracts, that might also help facilitate the taxi industry converting itself into cooperatives. I'm not so sure what kind of government contracts you are referring to, because the taxi industry is thriving as it is without government contracts. But perhaps you would enlighten us in that regard.
The last one coming up here from Honourable Salam.
Chairperson, I have browsed the documents that are before us, and I still maintain that these presentations are talking to the Department of Transport. That's the first thing, and not to the trade and industry and the cooperative side. The second thing, Chairperson, is that I am not sure of what relationship exists between the South African National Taxi Association, SANTACO, and the Transforum. Whether, because I know I worked in the Department of Transport and I was working on the taxi. That was my full-time job for 7 years. And among others, we established structures of taxi associations at regional and provincial and national level to create the SANTACO that exists today. And we, in the Northwest, converted the created two structures of the same people in each of the regions. One was the cooperative structure, and the other one was the association. And this paper here says the Department of Transport will resist the existence of cooperatives in the taxi industry. I think we need a separate meeting to discuss the issue of the taxi cooperatives. But we must maybe request, with your permission, Chairperson, that Mr. Browning takes the Cooperatives Act, and the two bills that we have, look at them and make the analysis of those acts insofar as their impact on the taxi industry and give a submission to that effect. Because these submissions that are given today do not speak to the purpose of the meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable James.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to suggest to Mr. Browning that there is nothing in this proposed legislation that is an offer to the taxi industry. It's an existing business. It's been going for a while. And there is nothing in this piece of legislation that offers anything. I mean, it's a small subsidy in terms of startup funds for new businesses that's in there, and then ongoing business support. The taxi industry, and the problem with the taxi industry is that competition over access to customers and competitiveness that requires getting from one destination as fast as possible results in the taking of shortcuts when it comes to driving habits. That's the problem with the taxi industry. But as a functioning business, I mean, it's fine. There's no need for state intervention or state support. So I don't know what the incentive is to form a cooperative.
The thing is this, that in the country, the government, and in fact indeed DTI itself, is trying to offer, if you like, a suite of enterprise opportunities. If you don't want to form a company, there is a co-op. Otherwise, there's the, individual who operates on his or her own with still the benefit of CC or rather Companies Act. But I don't think what we are trying to say and what the Act may be trying to say here, the overall vision and objective of DTI may be to insist that everyone gets into co-ops, if you like, and there's now the form of enterprise, small, medium, etc. available. And therefore we have to make it so attractive that you don't go the route of a company, that you don't go the route of an enterprise. We are offering you a choice. That's the whole, I think, point here. There is a choice. But I do think we may be skating on thin ice if we imply, and it does seem to be some sort of implication here, that the Department of Transport would not support co-ops, you know, and would support companies. I think if you wish to make that kind of statement, it would be best made to the Portfolio Committee of Transport. But here, we want to focus on the co-ops themselves. If taxis, the taxi industry, some of them want to get into co-ops, let them get into co-ops. You know, it's a choice, I think, that has been offered here. What I would, if you have anything to add while you are responding, issue would be if you see any impediment in the existing bill before us that may prevent those taxi operators who want to form co-ops from forming co-ops. If you see some impediment in the bill before you, then that is what I'd be interested in hearing. Right. So if you could respond briefly then to the questions raised and the comments and so on. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So many points have been raised that it really needs perhaps a half-day seminar. I will respond as briefly as I can, but may I perhaps respond, Madam Chair, to your comment. No, I do not think that there is anything in the either of the two bills which prevents the taxi industry forming cooperatives. That let me make that clear. I believe, in fact, the bills should offer greater latitude, if that's greater support to the taxi industry when it begins to form cooperatives. But the specific point, which is the high-profile topic at the moment, is government's wish, and the Department of Transport's wish, and the Minister's wish, and the Cabinet's wish, that within our 12 major cities, the taxi industry must give up what it is doing now and must form companies together with the bus operators in order to be able to benefit from government contracts. That is not working, and I have made, I hope I have made it clear in many quarters, and with respect, I hope I've managed to get this over to the committee today. The reason it is not working is because the jump to the company is too great, and the obvious intermediate step is that of the cooperative. Now, the transport cooperative is not particularly the field of interest of the DTI, but the cooperative is. And this is such a high-profile one. These cooperatives would be having contracts of, in Nelson Mandela Bay, for example, a minimum of 100 million rands a year. That is a mighty economic development, and it is one that I think the department and therefore this committee may wish to be aware of. It is not a interest of this committee is not transport, but it is cooperatives, and therefore the term transport cooperative comes to mind, is used, then the cooperative is something that I hope will be of interest to the committee. Very briefly on one or two of the other points, the Honourable Salau, I think, made the point, suggested that I was saying that the department, having formed Santarco and provincial councils and others and so on, it can't be said that it is not assisting the taxi industry. And indeed, in the Northwest, there was a very strong attempt to form taxi cooperatives. I do ask the question as to how successful and sustainable those have been, but it's not a matter perhaps for a discussion today. It is, however, the case that where it has been suggested, and indeed action has been taken to form taxi cooperatives for the purposes of operating under government contracts, then the arm of government that is responsible for allocating these contracts is resisting the formation of cooperatives because it would prefer to deal with companies. Just generally, I've talked in these last few moments and in my short presentation about the integrated rapid public transport network, forgive me, in our 12 major cities. But in response to the Honourable McIntosh, and I think possibly the Honourable James, I believe that the cooperative format is the right way in which to develop the taxi industry. I think they can be sold on that. And the incentive would indeed be the provision of contracts on a far wider scale, in exactly the same way that Putco and Golden Arrow and Interstate and I'll think of a few more later currently operate services under contract to government. I think that's about as far as I can go in responding to these very valuable comments from members of the committee, for which I thank them.
No, thank you very much indeed. And may I just add that clearly the documents you have produced show a great interest in this particular field. You know, many of us have just had the opportunity to look at it now. And I think you should take to heart the perhaps advice that may have been put forward here to, on the one hand, liaise again with the Taxi Association to see perhaps, if you like, what their position is, and maybe persuade some of them to come to the committee itself in this regard, because it's always better to deal with those directly affected, as it were, for us to get a clear position. And the other one, of course, would be with the Portfolio Committee of Transport. But any comments directly on the legislation, which you do concur, doesn't offer an impediment as you see it as an analyst. We do appreciate you coming down to share this with us. Thank you very much. Yes, Honourable Mabasa?
Mr. Browning missed to respond to my question. I don't know whether I should repeat it or he still remembers it.
I would be grateful if the Honourable Mabasa could just refresh my ageing memory.
No. My question was, has the taxi industry and the operators, have they engaged with the bill and have they made input? In other words, should we understand that as you speak like this, it is after you have guided them or somebody has guided them through studying and understanding the bill, so that, you know, we have a picture whether it's a yes or a no.
Madam Chair, the answer is, first of all, that I do not speak for either of the two main branches of the taxi industry, the Centarco or the National Taxi Alliance. I'm speaking independently as an analyst. I cannot say for certain, and no doubt the DTI would be able to answer this, whether either of these two bodies has been consulted on the bill. My interest is more, to be perfectly frank, Madam Chair, it's been stimulated by my 3 years of activity in Nelson Mandela Bay, where this matter has been raised, and where I have indeed briefed the taxi leadership on the two bills before you, and where we have finding this problem, or we don't have problems, this challenge, that the Department of Transport is not happy in dealing with cooperatives for reasons which I'm sure are very valid to them. And so I cannot say that the matter of the cooperative bills or cooperatives in general has been workshopped at the senior national level with either of the two major bodies.
I think you made it clear you are an analyst here, and in many ways you come as an individual, if I'm not mistaken. We've given our advice, perhaps as a committee, how you can best pursue this. And I think the points made by the chairperson of the subcommittee on co-ops should be taken seriously in this regard. But we thank you, Mr. Browning, for availing yourself here and sharing your views with the committee itself. Thank you very much. Members, we're just checking to see if tea is available. The next presenters just indicated that they've just been held up at the, the visitor's entrance, per se. So, you know, we don't have anything as such to get on with, except that we wanted to check if tea was available. You know, no point you going out if tea is not there, of course. But here they are already. Am I right? Yes. What we may do, if the tea is here, just to give the new presenters to get a chance to catch their breath, is to take a short 7-minute break or so. Can we do that? Is the tea available? All right. Why don't we, it's just 20 to 11, come back at about 10:45. Can we do that? Is that all right? Fine. Clarification from Joburg Metro on something. And once we've received that clarification, we'll be fine to proceed. And members have just asked me, well, what is the program tomorrow, given that today's program was out of kilter? Members are very busy and don't want to find themselves, you know, dealing with ghost committee business, as it were, issues that we aren't here to deal with. So let's just check on that. right. There have been some changes here, and I'd just like to clear one thing up with the City of Johannesburg, that the City of Johannesburg, who were coming tomorrow, am I correct there? The City of Johannesburg, that you've confirmed that the principals of the Metro have now instructed you to accept the SOLGA proposal as your proposal. Is that correct?
Thanks, Madam Chair. We initially did consult with SOLGA with regard to our position as a City of Johannesburg regarding the cooperative bill. And obviously we were of the opinion that all the city's positions were part of that presentation.
As long as we're quite clear, so we won't be having that tomorrow. Tomorrow we're only going to be hearing, from what I understand then, SAWIN from 9 o'clock to 10:30. Is that correct? To 11 o'clock. The South African APEX, I was told now, apologised on Tuesday afternoon to you, was it, by email, and asked if they could come on Friday. Now, I'm not happy with the state of affairs, either between the department and myself, or indeed with my own administration in Parliament, because if we knew this yesterday, members should have been informed by SMS or email, you know, yesterday, so that we know what's going on. We can't change the SAWIN because that's long-standing and so on, so that'll definitely continue to occur. But effectively, there are no co-ops, as I see it, per se, tomorrow at all. And then on Friday, we'll pick up the APEX, the National APEX Cooperative, and the Federation there, as well as the NCT, the National Consumer Tribunal, will still be here. The NCC itself will not be here, although they were communicated with 3 weeks ago, where I was only communicated with yesterday, indicating that the commissioner had a prior engagement, and I have already referred to that, have I not, on the matter, perhaps before some of you came, and that this has been rearranged for the 8th of August, the 8th of August. So if before you get your programs back, and I'd like to see the program back and adjusted tomorrow, Mr. Hermans, so members have a clear idea as to what is happening in this regard. Because effectively, the co-ops could have been squeezed into 2 days, and many of us have got constituency work. And so we should be there and not sitting here keeping a seat warm unnecessarily. So that was the answers your question, Honourable McIntosh.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. So what time are we meeting tomorrow? 9 o'clock. Okay.
We should also have the rest of the minutes either tomorrow or Friday to pass. You know, the one batch that we had outstanding.
Thank you.
So I'm sure you've got that clear here. And who's outstanding for next week, please, Mr. Herman? Well, the week after. Right, so it's all written submissions. Thank you very much. Yes, that still stands. I was purely referring to the co-op situation itself. So the third, Friday the 3rd remains. It's a standing meeting with respect to the budget. Yes, that's right. Now, I don't want to damage this little article, but I am going to ask when, where is he? I think we ought to check because I'm surprised it takes more than an hour to photostat a few documents. I am surprised. So if we can get him on his bicycle and coming back to the committee in the next 10 minutes with the documents, all right. Now, if we can deal with the next item, and I'm sorry that you were rushing to get here, and that is the South African Institute of for Public Accountants, it looks like here, also commenting on the bill, and we're looking at Ms. Faith Ngwenya, who is from the technical and standards side, or the executive. Is this correct, Ms. Ngwenya? Thank you. We're sorry we kept you waiting then, but we look forward to your input. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning to the Portfolio Committee and fellow colleagues. I'm actually from the South African Institute of Professional Accountants. First of all, just to say thank you to the Department of Trade and Industry for inviting us to take part. We actually were part even of the final editing of the Cooperatives Amendment Bill, and also to obviously afford us the chance to come and do our public presentation today. As indicated, I'm from the South African Institute of Professional Accountants, and I am aware that quite a number of members of the committee and the public at large might not be aware who CIPA is. We actually represent in excess of 7,000 professional accountants. It's not the chartered accountants, but it is the professional accountants. And since we are representing professional accountants that are in public private practice, and also in academia, we actually saw it fit that we come and make a representation when looking at the amendment bill, which really, I must say, that it actually is very forward-looking, and we were quite impressed with the amendments that have been put in place, because the cooperatives have actually been struggling, a number of cooperatives have been struggling, particularly from the financial reporting requirements point of view. And it is quite welcome to see the relaxation, even though it's not quite relaxation, that actually has now been incorporated into the amendment bill. Just looking at some of the sections, I've only picked up mainly the sections where we actually have found certain things that might be slightly tweaked or where we might need more clarity. So the first one is actually looking at Section 1 in the definitions, where it has defined the annual accounting report. And it has been defined as a report that contains the financial statements, the social report, and the management decision report. You'll realize from my presentation that I will keep referring to this because obviously it does pose a problem, especially from the assessment of this document where you are expected to express an opinion, that if we do not have a clear definition, as accountants, we obviously cannot assess whether the document is fair presentation, and also where there is no framework that underpins that particular report. We can review it, but we obviously cannot express an opinion on it. So especially the social report, we will obviously need to look if we are expected as accountants and auditors to obviously express an opinion. We will need to obviously understand exactly what will be expected out of that report, and as a result, is it something that should be included in what the department has actually referred to as the annual accounting report. What we have recommended is that rather than calling it an annual accounting report, since it does not exclusively have accounting-related reports in it, that we refer to it as an annual report, because the annual report is quite fully encompassing, and you can have other reports being included there. The minute you put accounting, then there has to be a framework where upon which it can actually be measured. So our recommendation is that we obviously refer to this report, the collective report, as the annual report, and within that annual report, you have got the financial statements, you have got the social report, and also you have the management report although the bill refers to that management report as a management decision report, again, we will need clarity as to what exactly a management decision report is. So just to summarize that point, our recommendation is that we refer to this as the annual report, and within the annual report, you have the different documents in it. The second one is obviously we are required as cooperatives to submit or to lodge our financial statements with the CIPC. In Form CR7, the actual title of the form says it's the lodgement of financial statements. So the question is, if one is looking at the annual accounting report, as it's referred to in the bill, what will you be submitting there? Will it just be the financial statements component, or will it be the entire annual report? If it's going to be the entire annual report, then obviously we may need to change regulations and also to make that form to obviously refer to the entire document, which consists of the financial statements plus the social report plus the management report. Okay, so that's really what we have actually picked up as far as that is concerned. Then coming through to still under definition, the definition of audit. I think we are all aware that audit within South Africa, we have the Auditing Profession Act, and it defines audit. And in the bill, in the Cooperatives Amendment Bill, audit has been defined as, it means objectively examining and evaluating the annual accounting report, bearing in mind what I've just said about the two other reports there not being verifiable, in accordance with the prescribed or applicable auditing standards. We do not at this stage have auditing standards that can audit the social report or the decision making or the decision management decision report with an objective of expressing an opinion, which is back to my initial point that obviously we cannot express an opinion on all of those. The only report that we can express an opinion on is the financial statements, the annual financial statements. An opinion as to the fairness or compliance with an identified reporting framework and applicable statutory standards. The problem with that is obviously, as mentioned, that the annual accounting report includes the social report and the management decision report, which from an auditing perspective cannot necessarily, we cannot express, we can review it, but we cannot express an opinion on it. The recommendation is that because we are referring to an area that is clearly defined in the Auditing Profession Act, that when we are referring to audit, we then confine ourselves to the definition as set out in the Auditing Profession Act. So rather than defining it just for cooperatives, we leave it as it is defined in the Auditing Profession Act. And also, what has been a problem over the years with cooperatives is that we are required, Section 55 of the existing Cooperatives Act allows a cooperative to apply for exemption from an audit. It then goes further to say that you can actually appoint either a person within the cooperative to audit the entity or any other suitably qualified person. And again, when one goes back to the Audit Professions Act, you have to be a registered auditor to conduct an audit. So we understand that sometimes we use the word audit loosely, but that causes conflict and confusion in the market because the minute you say this is an audit report and it wasn't prepared by a registered auditor, you have proclaimed to be something that you are not. So we therefore are recommending that even the choice of words that we are using in the bill, they actually incorporate this because obviously if we are saying it is a report, for example, we allow an accounting professional or an accounting officer to prepare the financial statement. An accounting officer will not necessarily be auditing, but they will be compiling the financial statements. They cannot audit. An independent reviewer cannot audit, but they will obviously be confirming through inquiry, through analytical reviews whether the financial whether there is anything that really comes to their attention which proves the financial statements not to be what they claim to be. So we just need to make sure that when we are using these terms, we clearly understand that audit is audit and it has to be used in terms of the APA. And all other services obviously have to be referred accordingly. This obviously has caused also problems for the non-auditing professionals that have assisted co-ops in the past in preparing their financial statements, that they also get into the loop of actually declaring it as audited financial statements when they are not auditors. And as a result, they can actually be subjected to disciplinary inquiries and even being charged for misrepresentation if they claim to be auditors when they are not. Also, we refer to that the auditor will produce an auditor's annual accounting report. And I'm sure IRBA will also have an issue with that because from an auditing perspective, there is nothing like an auditor's annual accounting report. You either are giving your audit report or you are a compiler or it's an independent review report. So that's obviously confusing and it should obviously again just be referring to audited financial statements. So you either are producing audited financial statements or you are producing your audit report on the entire cooperative as a whole, but not auditor's annual accounting report. The next one in section 1J, it defines the independent review. We are recommending, again, when one looks at the independent review, we have an international standards for review engagement that regulates or that stipulates the standards that needs to be adhered to when one is preparing an independent or conducting an independent review. We therefore are recommending that even the definition for the independent review in section 1J, that it actually uses the same terminology that appears in ISRE. At this stage, you have ISRE 2400, which is still an exposure draft, and we have ISRE, the existing one, which is 2410. And this defines an independent review as an assessment of the financial statements with an objective to conclude through performing primarily an inquiry and analytical procedures and evaluating the sufficiency and appropriateness of evidence that has been obtained. And what we actually are declaring here is that there is nothing that has come to the attention of the practitioner, that is of the independent reviewer, that causes him or her to believe that the financial statements are not prepared in all material respects in accordance with an applicable financial reporting framework. So our suggestion is that we keep the definition of independent review as this is an internationally recognized definition of an independent review. Again, Section 1J, the independent reviewer now. The problem with Section 1J, again, where it's defining the person who conducts or who performs the review, is that it has defined this person as a person that is registered with an accredited professional body contemplated in Chapter 3 of the Auditing Professions Act. Now, independent reviewers are not necessarily included in Chapter 3 of the Audit Professions Act. My understanding is that the regulator IRBA is currently requesting an amendment to the APA such that it allows them to regulate independent reviewers. So the APA as it stands does not cover the independent review. So therefore, we have the Companies Act 71 of 2008, which has introduced independent review to South Africa. And in introducing the independent review, they actually have referred to the independent review being conducted by a registered auditor or a member in good standing belonging to a professional body that is recognized in terms of Section 33 of the Audit Professions Act, and that Section 33 at this stage refers to the chartered accountants, or thirdly, it could be accounting officers as recognized within the Close Corporations Act. So our recommendation is that we use the same definition or analysis of who can actually perform the independent review rather than obviously trying to link it only or to confine it to Chapter 3, because Chapter 3 at this stage only deals with registered auditors and nobody else. And also, we have got we actually are requesting that, because when you go to Section 26, it's actually amending Section 29 of the existing Act, but it refers to an appointment of an independent accounting officer. And yet, there is no definition of who this independent accounting officer is. So we are recommending that we do include in Section 1J the definition of an independent accounting officer. And our suggestion is that when we are defining an independent accounting officer, we use Section 26B of the, rather, Section 29 of the regulations to the Companies Act 71 of 2008, which defines who the independent accounting professional is. Okay, so we can use the same definition that they have got for the independent accounting professional, and instead of, again, just leaving it blank, and yet we have referred to this person later in the Act. And the Companies Act has defined an independent accounting professional as a registered auditor in terms of the Auditing Professions Act, or it could be a member in good standing of a professional body that has been accredited in terms of Section 33 of the Auditing Professions Act, or it could be a person that's qualified to be appointed as an accounting officer of a closed corporation in terms of Section 60, subsection 1 and 2 and 4 of the Closed Corporations Act, number 69 of 1984. And it then goes further to say, what does it mean by independent? And that will be a person that does not have a personal financial interest in the cooperative or related or interrelated entity, is not involved in the day-to-day management of the cooperative, nor has been involved at any time during the previous 3 years. Or is not related, the final one which I didn't include here, is not related to any of the people that are mentioned in subsection 2. So that's our recommendation, that we actually use this independent accounting professional definition in defining what we are referring to as an independent accounting officer. We commend the bill for removing the 5% or the specified 5% reserve of your reserves as non-distributable, because this now will allow cooperatives to actually determine in their constitution as to how much that percentage is, because again, there was confusion as to whether you should just limit it to 5%, can you go beyond 5%, and in some cases when they submitted those documents with anything other than 5%, the financial statements were actually rejected. So we actually are quite impressed that we have now removed the 5% reserve stipulation. Section 3B, we also are quite impressed with the removal of the one vote per member, and again, the fact that we actually have put a cap to the maximum number of votes that a person can hold depending on the number of members in that particular cooperative. Section 47 of the Principal Act, when it refers to the auditor's annual accounting report, again, which I have already elaborated on, and we are therefore, it actually requires, it's for the first time it brings in the various categories. We have not seen the revised regulations yet. So we are hoping that in the revised regulations, so the categories A, category B and category C within the primary cooperatives, that it will actually be defined, and also it will be classified either in terms of their revenue or some other quantifiable amount that can obviously be used to identify that this is within your primary cooperative, it is a category A or a category B. At the moment, it's actually referring to a small, and we do not quite understand what is a small cooperative. So we are hoping that the regulations will actually clarify that, or else bring it into the Act as to how the various categories will actually be distinguished. Okay. And then Section 47, again, of the Principal Act, it stipulates or it states that Category A primary cooperatives are not required to have an audited annual accounting report, but instead they can produce an annual accounting report, but it does not state who can prepare this. And I think this is where the independent accounting professional or somebody else can actually be introduced. So we are recommending that that is stated in the Act as to who can actually prepare this annual accounting report, which I believe will be a very simplified set of financials for the very small cooperatives. And also, the Act and the Amendment Bill still refers to the registrar, and it's not clear whether the registrar is now the Commission, CIPC, or are we going to have a registrar for cooperatives, which, again, bearing in mind that we have Section 91, which is bringing in the whole new governance of the cooperatives. So the registrar, again, I'm not sure whether it was just left there because the old Act, we had the registrar of companies, but now that we've got the Commission, we might need to obviously relook at that, seeing that the regulation still refers to CIPC as the body that has to receive the applications and everything and the financial statements of the co-op. Okay. Again, the same problem with confining the definition to the Audit Professions Act. In Section 37 of the Amendment Bill, that's amending Section 49 of the Principal Act, it stipulates that a person is disqualified from being an auditor or independent reviewer of a cooperative if that person is not registered with the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants. Again, why South African Institute of Chartered Accountants? Or does not satisfy the requirements for registration as an auditor as contemplated in Chapter 3. And as mentioned, it's just the auditor that's included in Chapter 3 and the chartered accountants that are in public practice are the only people that are included in Section 33 of the Audit Professions Act. So rather than complicating it, leave it as what we have got in the Companies Act, where it actually has the various levels and has the independent review. So that's really what we have picked up as areas that we would like to see either clarity on or being amended as per the recommendations that we actually have made. And we just want to thank the Portfolio Committee for giving us the chance to actually air our concerns. Thank you.
Very much, Ms. Ngwenya. That was a very concise address to the issues that have been raised, that you wish to raise with respect to the two co-op bills before us. Thank you very much. Now, members, having heard that input, and we've got it in front of us, let's see by show of hands. We have the Honourable Mabasa, Honourable Van der Merwe, Honourable Salah. Right.
Thank you very much, Comrade Chair. I also I wish to express gratitude on the work that has been done by SAIPA, Ms. Nguenya. Thank you very much for the presentation. That the comments made are going to be invaluable to the committee. We will respond to some of them now, but on the main, it will be as the process goes on, as we receive more input from other submissions. It is at that stage that we will keep referring to some of the input that you have made, so that we end with what in a globular manner informs the bill. But I just wanted to say thanks for the well-expressed input.
Thank you very much, and I'd like to echo that. I certainly have learned more about accounting and accounting standards in the last 2 days than I've ever known in my life before. So I really just want to say that we really appreciate this, because it has given us a deeper understanding of the complications that might arise for cooperatives, which we are actually trying to encourage to be sustainable. Yesterday, as you know, we heard from the Chartered Accountants, and they talked, and I just want to know if this is the same thing that you're saying. They talked about splitting accounting from assurance. Now, your recommendation is that there should be this annual report rather than what they call annual accounting report. Does that amount to the same thing? Is that essentially what you're saying? I've got one more question. Okay. And then the second one that I was concerned about was the question of the requirement in the bill for auditing rather than this independent reviewer, I think, that you're talking about, because we don't want to make it more onerous than the Companies Act for the small cooperatives. So just help me to clarify, because sometimes different language is used, and it all makes sense, but I just want to understand that it's basically the same kind of approach that you're taking to what we've heard previously. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Vandermeer, Honourable Salam.
Chairperson, I would be wrong if I don't echo the same sentiments as my colleague did on this, and also, of course, to appreciate more especially the cooperation of acts where they mean one and the same thing, while using different words in another act and different words in the other. If this thing refers to the same thing that appears in another act, why not taking the same act word then? On page 21, there is just a little typing error there. The last word in that page, I think it should be different, not different. Is there a difference? And it's written there, is there a difference? But that's a minor issue, I think. It doesn't suggest that the presentation is faulty. This presentation is wonderful.
Right. Thank you, Honourable McIntosh.
Mrs. Faith and Gwenya, could our concern is, and there are three levels of co-ops proposed, and clearly the lowest or the simplest or is to help a group of, let's say, for example, women who've got a few chickens in a co-op, say six women or eight women, and they want a chicken co-op. Are you satisfied that we are not for that very small co-op not possibly setting too difficult a threshold for them, let's supposing they are, you know, in, I don't know, Makia or in Mount Frere, if they need to get their order, their accounting done. And may I also say it's a very good presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very very much. Over to you, Ms. Nguyen, if you could respond to some of those comments and all of the questions.
Okay, thank you, Honourable Members. Just to clarify between assurance and an audit, what the independent review has done, okay, maybe I should go one step back and say they first the compilation, which is the preparation of the financial statements. And once the financial statements have been prepared, we then need somebody to either come and audit in a full audit, or it could be an assurance which is done, or limited assurance rather, which is through an independent review. So that everything is coming from the financial statements that have been prepared. So you now either get an audit which will express an opinion, or you will get an independent review which is very basic through inquiries, through analytical reviews, rather than the in-depth auditing. We'll obviously look at whether everything that has gone into the financial statement, there is nothing that really is amiss. That's the difference between the review and the audit. So to come back to Honourable Member McIntosh's question as to whether are we not going to complicate if, again, we are trying to help the very small cooperatives to make sure that they still comply. I think where the bill is talking about the financial statements, in the primary cooperatives category A only requiring financial statements that are, in fact, it then says a report that is done by an independent accounting officer. That really is meant to be the very elementary one where, and that is why it's important to indicate who can do this in the regulations or the Act, so that we do not again then require an auditor to come and do the small one. Because if we can clearly identify who can prepare this basic accounting report for the very, very small, and again, with our categories being clearly identified, either in terms of turnover or in terms of member participation, then we will be able to say this could actually be done by any person within the co-op who has basic accounting knowledge. So that needs to be clarified in the regulations. And when we are going to the upper ones, so we are saying for the middle level, that middle level you do not need an audit. An audit gets very expensive. You may not need an audit if you are looking at a fairly medium-sized primary co-op. It does not necessarily need an audit. However, it will require a form of assurance, and that is the limited assurance that is brought in by an independent review. And the problem that we have by the independent review, again, being referred to the Audit Professions Act, is that once you put it within the Audit Professions Act, you are still limiting it to registered auditors only that can do that independent review.
Right. I think just a question there to the Chief Director. When one got the purpose and objectives being given to us in Mark's building a month or so ago, I thought one of the points that was made was that one wanted with the certain primary co-ops, as it were, to broaden this auditing or accountant, and that one would look at it somewhat differently to what the Companies Act had done. Could you just clarify that for the committee again, please?
Thanks, Chairperson. I think that is, and I'm very grateful that you've asked that question. We've got three instruments that are proposed in the bill, which I think Ms. Nguyen has, in a way, touched on them correctly. We've got the audit annual accounting report, which is going to be compiled by auditors. And then we've also got the independent review report. report, a report which is going to be compiled not by auditors. So I think that is where there is a difference between my colleague and ourselves, as well as also the accounting report, which will be compiled by managers within the cooperative, which are very elementary, very basic. This is something that we're saying that auditors and accountants who are independent outside charging, who are engaging in the space of independent review, this must be done internally so that it does not become a cost whatsoever to a woman sitting, a woman owning cooperative in Lusike City. If they've got somebody who has some financial, qualifications, they can carry that out and submit it to the registrar accordingly. But we have also in the bill, just that these are issues that are not targeted, encourage the Cooperative Development Agency to assist, not only just with the accounting report, which is going to be carried out by managers, with this independent review, so that what we're saying is that in terms of the cost for those cooperatives that are at the level of the category, because we're going to now give revenue categorization on them in the regulation, that those ones are going to therefore be assisted by the Cooperative Development Agency in terms of some elementary subsidization so that we can minimize the cost even there. Even though those will not be auditors carrying it, but it might have some particular costs, so that we're looking at the Cooperative Development Agency to assist in that particular regard. That was the spirit of the bill. That's how it now categorizes and removing the cost within these particular issues. I can see that what Mem has also attached on is to say we must relate these things to Company Act. The problem with that is this, is that at the moment the Companies Act as it stands only recognizes one form that must be audited, which is financial alone. It doesn't talk to management, and it doesn't talk to social report that needs to be able to be accounted for. So once you, by implication, refer to it in total to the Companies Act, then you have a difficulty of bringing the other two, who are not at the moment, even in the entire audit profession, right up down, have covered those two aspects, the social report and the management report. There is that particular issue. We've engaged SAICA, we've engaged our accounting profession body, even ILBA, to say that why can't such a particular regulation be developed? Because I think yesterday we heard from NUMSA and also the unions that you've got pseudo-cooperatives. Pseudo-cooperatives are coming about because there is no management accounting to account for principles of cooperatives, to account for the really correct approach in dealing with the cooperatives. And that aspect is not yet developed, but we're busy working with them to develop that management report and the framework that will govern that particular aspect, including also the social report to govern that, because it is not there in the economy at the moment. Because that is required. That's how you're going to safeguard pseudo-cooperatives not to come into the economy, because you're now going to ask them to deal with the management report as well as the social aspect. Principle number 7 of the cooperatives says that cooperatives will provide what you call it contribution to community and all of that kind of stuff. What is that particular aspect? We need to define that very clearly and capture it. It can only be captured by that social report that needs to come in on board. So that is why we have therefore steered away from the Companies Act, because of the fact that it is narrow in its definition and the fact that it doesn't cover for these two components, and create a regime that's going to cover for all the three, financial reporting and management reporting, as well as also social reporting. But the essence of it is to make sure that when we do it in such a way that it doesn't become burdensome to even the smaller micro cooperatives that are there. That is the spirit of the bill. There are some issues that we need to work out with my colleague. We will then sort them out, issues about definitions and all of that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chief Director, Honourable Jason Duma, I just wanted you to clarify the one issue, because you will be coming back, as you know, to respond to all of the issues that we get. But it was important just to get that tiny clarification at the time. And we don't want, as it were now, a dialogue per se, because we've had that one issue clarified. But I did notice that the DDG, Sipho Sekodo, is here, and I know the only reason you appear to be late is because we had to take the meeting forward. So if you aren't really late for when it was scheduled. We appreciate that. And then, of course, we've got Mr. Rupko, the registrar of co-ops here. Thank you for being here, among all the others. I think that the members, unless they have any further comments or clarification, Ms. Nguyenya, this really has helped a great deal. You have directed your points to the bills on the table. Indeed, that is extremely helpful, the way you've specified the issue in question and also made a recommendation and given the reason for the recommendation. That, to us, is extremely constructive and is really the way we would like submissions to be made, so that it's quite clear. So thank you very much for being with us here. Of course, you are welcome when the DTI does get its full opportunity, which will cover a couple of days perhaps. We will inform you of this, and should you wish to be present at that time, you're very welcome to. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you. Members, looking at what we did propose here, we've covered all of that. I have asked for the committee secretary, Mr. Herman, to hand out the research report we got on NCC. I'm not sure if that's been done. It has been. And to indicate, there were some broad questions. I'm not sure if Mr. Herman has them here. Have you? Perhaps you can just indicate them. But what we will do for the National Consumer Commissioner, if you look at your page one there, you will see the brief that was given to the research department, and the bullets in particular. This is what we're wanting to pursue, those bullets that are there, well, fair enough, plus, of course, the other broad budgetary issues that were raised previous to that and which the Commissioner could not meet us for, you will remember, in June, because she was seeing the Auditor General then. And then, so this is our first meeting since she couldn't make that previous. So if there's anything you'd like to add, we would certainly want it before 1 o'clock, so that we can send this letter off to her, confirming the 8th, Wednesday the 8th of August. That's in order then. So those bullets are the will cover the issues that we wish to address. Right. So I don't see any comments, and what I have been asked is, Mr. Hermans has asked if the subcommittee on co-op can meet immediately after this meeting. It would be very helpful. I also know that the members who are going to Kenya should meet tomorrow immediately after the meeting. So today it's the subcommittee purely immediately after this meeting, and tomorrow if we could have the delegation that is going to Kenya to please meet, so that if there's anything to be ironed out, it can be done so at that time. Right, thank you very much to DTI for being with us here, and also to all of those who contributed to the submissions, and members of staff of Parliament, and also to Ms. Naidu and members of the committee. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned until tomorrow, 9 o'clock. Thank you. In the same venue.